I'm Alyssa Bresnak, and over the past year, I've spoken with founders and fans, investors and engineers, employees, celebrities, all to answer one question. What happened to HQ Trivia? An app that drew millions of live viewers and was supposed to be the future of TV, until it wasn't. From the Ringer Podcast Network, this is Boom Bust, the rise and fall of HQ Trivia. Now on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like a dozen of them.
Dead?
They're dead?
So we're in the controversial season now. Season two. So many people then hated this season. When you first saw it, I mean, did you have those feelings initially, and it's something that grew on you over time, or did you like it right away?
So when I first saw it, no.
Yeah, same here.
When I first saw it, I'm not even going to lie and pretend like I enjoyed season two when I first saw it. It's not like I didn't. It's not like I didn't enjoy it. I never really gave season two a chance when it first started coming on. It looked so much different. It felt so much different that I wasn't really willing to give season two of The Wire a chance. That's really what happened. And then something else happened on subsequent rewatches, because I had downloaded all the seasons of The Wire on this torrent on my old faithful, the silver lightning laptop of the mid to late 2000s. At one point, I had most of the seasons on there. And when I would do these rewatches, because I would travel by train from LA to Louisiana because I was scared to fly. And so when I would do these rewatches, I would always skip season two. And one day, I just said, you know what I'm going to get into? It was a Thanksgiving. I used to have a tradition where all Thanksgiving day long, I would watch The Wire. And one Thanksgiving, maybe like 10 years ago, I said, I'm just going to watch nothing but season two. I'm going to get into season two. And that's when I realized it's a pivotal season. It's an important season. And it's one of the better seasons of The Wire. It's just the landscape is different. And the characters look different, but season two is incredibly strong.
Yeah, and I think, and I hope people who are rewatching with us kind of maybe have this epiphany as well, is that season two, you feel bad for it. I think season two's positioning is really what screwed it, is that you're coming off the high of this first season. Then you have season three, which is like fucking phenomenal. And so This is sandwiched in between, and because the series takes a detour. Like, suddenly, just as you had gotten used to, the Barksdale organization, you're learning how the cops work and the inner workings of the police department, Baltimore's approach to policing. Then all of a sudden, like, what's this water? Why are we in docks?
Yeah.
Why are we in a port?
Right.
Like, it's an entirely new cast of people that you suddenly have to learn. And thinking back on it now, that's a courageous decision to make.
Right.
A super courageous decision to make, given where the story was going and how robust it was. But just to give people some backstory before we dive into season two. So David Simon, it was his goal. He did not want this series. He did not want The Wire to become just about drugs and cops. He did not want that at all. He wanted to tell not just the story of the drug trade, but he wanted to tell the story of a city. And the port became super important because that was the way that it took it out of inner city Baltimore, and it took it kind of off the streets to also tell something that's happened in a lot of urban cities, especially in areas like Baltimore, which is deindustrialization. That happened. And that was a major, because, you know, you have less workers who are in these blue collar jobs, who are in these manufacturing jobs, who are in jobs like what we see on the port, that also is a co-conspirator into the proliferation of drugs because they lost industry because of technology. And That's a gutsy way to tell a story, but it's also a very smart way because it's the truth. It happened, you know, Detroit, for example. I mean, granted, we're still making cars, but it's not the same as it was in the 50s and 60s in Detroit when they thought Detroit was going to be like a New York, that it was going to be like Los Angeles.
Oh, at one point.
Yeah.
At one point, it had become on that level of a city. It was it was a huge, huge sort of bastion of industry, and people were moving there. It was one of the fastest growing cities in not just America, but in the world. And I think something else that makes a lot of sense when you put it in context about season two is that when Nino Brown was sitting up there and he was talking about ain't no Uzis made in Harlem, we don't have no boats, no ships, and anything like that. In season two, we get to see the mechanism by which these things come in, and we get to see it from faces that aren't normally connected to the drug trade. And so when you see that desperation affects people and makes them take, desperation doesn't just affect Black people in West Baltimore and make them do illegal things. Desperation and the loss of that industry that you're talking about affects people and will then corrupt them, or not even necessarily corrupt them, but make them take chances for money and for upward mobility that they might have not done. So the corruption at the port by guys, characters that by and large we come to love, it connects itself to what was going on in West Baltimore. And as I got older, that oneness of people, that oneness of experience, that similarity in desperation became more of an attractive theme to me. And that's probably why season two resonated more with me the older I got.
So there's a few different reasons why this season happened. As I mentioned in the last podcast when we did our season awards, David Simon and Ed Burns and everybody else did not know The Wire was going to be renewed until they were about halfway through season one. And there was some concerns about the show, even though we both kind of gone back and forth and maybe argued a bit with ourselves about whether or not this was actually a Black show, despite the fact that it had a ton of Black characters. There was an authenticity to it that made it feel that way, certainly. But, you know, maybe not a Black show in the ways we're used to thinking of Black shows. Certainly, as you so intelligently pointed out, the fact that The Wire didn't win anything in any awards definitely makes it seem like it was indeed a Black show. Okay.
Yeah.
Two Emmy nominations, both for writing, and they didn't win shit. So that's the only thing The Wire ever got. But there was some concerns brought up in the network circles about the show have being as Black as it was. You had white characters, but to them it felt like a Black show. And you know, when you read All the Pieces Matter by Jonathan Abrams, you know, they don't speak of that. That's more of like sort of a Hollywood rumor behind closed doors that's why he took it in this direction. But I tend to not believe that as much. I mean, I think that was probably a concern it brought up, because David Simon, the one thing that's very apparent about him, he's going to stick true to the story. Like he's not going to compromise on, I'll be to make these white people comfortable. Let us create a storyline that involves a bunch of white people, and then that way I get to keep my show. He does not strike me at all as that type of person. He'd be the opposite. I think it was important to him, based off his own words, to show that the drug problem is not just a Black problem with a Black face, that this is a much wider and deeper problem that has to do with a lot of things. It's not one simple answer. It's a lot of complicated answers. And this was his way of getting to the heart of that complication. And look, just like you, when I first saw season two, it was such a letdown because I had gotten so attached to what I'd already known. And it took me a second rewatch to appreciate season two and realize, wow, it's hard for me to put it in the top three of The Wire seasons. I only put it fourth, not out of disrespect, but just because I can't jump it over four and I can't jump it over three and I wouldn't jump it over one. It's way better to me than season five, personally. That's just the way I feel about it. But I think this season gets disrespected so much, and it's in a way a compliment to David Simon because of what he built in the first season.
Yeah, like, you know, the familiarity of the show, you had spent some time with the show, you had spent some time with the characters, you had spent some time with the world. And then to be thrust out of that world, it almost felt like you were starting over. That a lot of the work you had done in season one was being undone. And it, you know, as human beings, we want to come back and fall and get back on that, you know, comfortable couch that's on the pit, that was in the pit, and like settle back into it and pick up where we left off. But, you know, that's not the how life is. Life oftentimes doesn't pick up where it left off. It changes. And I think one thing that's evident when you start watching the beginning of season two is it's a reflection of some of the chaos that has gone down in season one and of how people are changing up and moving. And then when we meet the new characters, we kind of get a sense of their world as introduced the same way that we got a sense of the Barksdale's world. So let's go ahead and do it. Let's get into it.
I'm excited. I definitely realized in watching this this episode of this first episode of season two, which is called Ebb Tide, is there's so much about this episode that's exactly like the first episode of season one. They follow, there is a blueprint that they follow in this that is very, very similar. So getting right to it in terms of a recap, you know, as we said, you are introduced now to an entirely new storyline and an entirely new family, and that would be the Sabatka family. Frank, Ziggy, your boy. See, we got to come up with a title for it, because Ziggy does as many fuckboy moments as Stringer has. Ziggy has
so disrespectful to Stringer. So disrespectful to Stringer. Ziggy is a fuck up, like, of epic television proportions. Fuck up
are not the same thing, right?
I get it, but I don't know if anyone in the history of TV, and I know I love to be hyperbolic, but anyone in the history of TV is as big a fuck up as Ziggy Sabatka.
Okay, all right. So a whole new cast, the Sabatka family that's on the porch, you get introduced to them. New cast of supporting characters, Beatty, the Greeks, Sergey, a.k.a. Boris, and a reintroduction to Stan Valchek, who is Presbyluski's father-in-law. So all those characters come at you in this very first episode. And just like episode one of season one, as I mentioned, a lot of parallels there. Episode one, season one started with a murder. Episode one, season two starts with murders.
Yeah.
So McNulty, who is now assigned to